this is a huge win for the internet and for the free press and the public, because it says for the first time that, you know, people who publish news, who get information from sources and use that in order to inform the public, are journalists, no matter whether they publish in magazines or radio or the newspaper, or they publish on their blogging news site.
This is podtech.net. Welcome to Marketing Voices, featuring the fresh perspectives of innovative marketing leaders and examining how social media is changing marketing throughout the world. Here's your host, Jennifer Jones.
Hi, this is Jennifer Jones, and I'm here today with Lauren Gelman, who is the Associate Director of Stanford Law School's Center for Internet and Society. And Lauren is my guest today, and she'll be speaking with us about a state appeals court decision made Friday, May 26, between Apple and the blogging community. And this decision has major impact for communications in the digital age, and we're going to be talking all about it. So, Lauren, welcome to Marketing Voices.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great. Well, thank you for coming. So if you could give the listeners some set of how this decision really has come down and what it really means, that would be just great.
Right. So this case started when a number of bloggers who run a web news site posted some information about a new Apple product, Asteroid. And this was information that Apple felt was trade secreted and had been leaked by one of their employees, and they wanted to find out who did it. So they have brought a case and issued a subpoena to the blogger's ISP to try to get the identity of the individuals who had corresponded with the bloggers and who had leaked to them what they considered to be their trade secret. And what the appeals court did was say that, well, they said a couple of things, but the big decision was that these journalists who publish online on this blog site are journalists and are entitled to the full breadth of First Amendment and state constitutional protections that all journalists get to be able to protect the identity of their sources. And this is a huge win for the internet and for the free press and the public, because it says for the first time that, you know, people who publish news, who get information from sources and use that in order to inform the public, are journalists, no matter whether they publish in magazines or radio or the newspaper, or they publish on their blogging news site.
So really, this decision allows bloggers to have the exact same rights as regular journalists.
Exactly. And the most important of those rights is the ability to protect the identity of your sources, because the law recognizes that unless people are able to come forth and tell journalists what are going on and do so anonymously, we're not going to be able to have an informed debate on a wide range of different issues. So from our very earliest foundings of our country, we've protected journalists' sources and have protected journalists' right to not reveal those sources.
So do you think that most bloggers really saw themselves as journalists before this ruling?
Well, I think some bloggers definitely do see themselves as journalists. I think that, we submitted an amicus brief in this case where I represented a number of different people who publish on weblogs, and they consider themselves journalists, and what they are doing is distributing news to the public. And, especially in today's media culture, so many journalists are sometimes publishing in a newspaper or sometimes publishing on the web, and they were very concerned that when they get information from sources, they need to be able to promise those sources the same protection no matter where they end up deciding to publish it. So I think that a lot of bloggers do consider themselves to be journalists, but a lot of bloggers do not consider themselves to be journalists. And this case did not say that every blogger is a journalist. It just said that if you are doing journalism, just because you publish it in a blog, it doesn't mean you can't get the same protection of a journalist who publishes in the newspaper.
So this show is all about social media, consumer-generated media, and blogs, wikis, and that sort of thing. And the people that listen are marketing people, executives, and a lot of company leaders. And so in terms of the impact that this would actually have on a company, not necessarily an individual blogger, can you extrapolate a little bit and tell the audience what impact you think that might have?
Right. Well, one of the issues in this case was the constitutional protection for journalists to not give up their sources is a qualified one, which means in some cases they're going to be able to protect their sources and in some cases they're not. And in California we have a 5-part test that says when information is going to be revealed and when it's going to be not revealed. And the most important element of that test in this case and in most cases is the steps that the company takes to see if they can identify the leaker before going to the journalist. And in this case, Apple had questioned its employees, asked them, did you leak this? And that was all they did before going to the journalists. And the court said that that's definitely not enough, that the burden needs to be on Apple to put their employees under oath, ask them the same questions, to investigate their server logs and other technology that would allow them to know who might have been the leaker. So companies nowadays, you know, keep their trade secrets secret. Coca-Cola has kept the formula for Coke secret for many years, and companies know how to do that, and they are going to have to take these same efforts, even increase their efforts, and talk to their employees and investigate any leaks before going to the journalist. So the court's not going to allow the journalist to be the first place that companies go to if they want to investigate a leak.
So what's next legally at this point?
Well, Apple will probably appeal this case to the state Supreme Court. As far as I'm aware, Apple hasn't made any public statements about the decision, but I would imagine that they will do that, and we will see what happens, you know, at the next level. But this court wrote a really great, I think, 68-page decision that said that journalists should be able to protect their sources and that people who publish on weblogs are journalists and that Apple didn't take the kinds of steps that they would need to take in order to make sure that their trade secrets were kept secret.
Could companies on their own blogging sites have any issues with, as it relates to this case, have any issues with confidentiality? Again, like take a corporate perspective, not just an individual blogger's perspective, and run into, you know, any issues with confidentiality?
Well, this case was focused on the issue of ability to protect sources. So, you know, to the extent that companies are using their blog to distribute news or are dealing with bloggers as journalists and trying to determine whether they're going to let them into their media events or whether what the types of information that they're going to publish on their site is going to be, if they're going to talk about the industry generally, if they're going to have any sort of gossip about what's going on in the industry, then this case could offer some guidance as to what might happen if there was a question about a information that was leaked. But I think we're in an age where the number of journalists is expanding exponentially because it no longer means that you have to be able to pay for a printing press. There was an old quote that said, "Free press is available to everybody with their own." Who can afford a printing press. And nowadays, the Internet is so easy to get on that so many more people can be journalists. So I think that it's important for the media individuals who work at companies to recognize that the scope of journalists have expanded. Their ability to publish is different. In this case, the journalist published documents that showed the working of a prototype of a new device. So it's not just about describing that device, but it's also pointing users to primary source material. So the whole relationship between companies and the press and the public has transformed over the past 10 years. And I think companies have a lot less ability to control their own public image. And they, you know, do so by dealing, you know, having their own websites and, you know, their own blogs and being able to interact with their public. This has been a great boom for companies, but it's also opened up the scope of people that they have to deal with as press who are talking about their products online.
This is very interesting to me, and you oversee a lot at the Stanford Law School's Center for Internet and Society. Can you just quickly give the listeners an idea of what else you're looking at besides, you know, obviously this suit and then this whole impact on journalism?
Right. Well, I mean, I work on a lot of different issues, including, you know, privacy issues, which are, you know, very interesting issues raised, you know, especially with marketing and, you know, how do people consent to their personal information being given over to companies. And I teach a class on privacy law that looks at a lot of these issues, as well as looking at issues related to the government and, you know, subpoenas and what other sorts of data is being distributed and collected. Yeah, and there's just a wide, so much is happening in the internet law space these days. It's just a wonderfully interesting issues to work on.
This has been Jennifer Jones with Lauren Gelman, the Associate Director of Stanford Law School's Center for Internet and Society. Thank you to all my listeners, and until next time, I hope all the voices you hear are marketing voices.